Off Trail Learning. This is Blake Bowles. Nathan Lester is one of my favorite people in the world. Whenever I staff at Not Back to School Camp with him, we always find ourselves in some sort of long debate or intense conversation that flows between psychology and politics and philosophy and religion and systems of belief. He is just a treasure trove of really smart theories about the human condition. And he recognizes the scientific method and what makes something a valid truth claim versus not. And he's also a super friendly and compassionate guy who really gets to know the young people who he works with through camp. And he's almost a fully licensed California therapist. So all around, incredible guy. He needs no more introduction. Here is a fantastic conversation with Nathan Lester. My guest today is my good friend Nathan Lester, a longtime staffer at Not Back to School Camp and a soon-to-be licensed couples and family therapist. Welcome, Nathan.
Thanks, Blake.
We are talking about the challenges that come with the total freedom provided by something like unschooling or attending a school or institution like North Star or Sudbury School, where as a young person, you pretty much get to do whatever you want all day. And this is way more freedom than anyone else in the world probably gets. And so there's challenges, there's problems that come along with that level of freedom. So that's what we're going to dig into. But first, let's start with your background, Nathan. How did you get into the world of unschooling? What was your gateway drug?
My gateway drug. I guess I have to give credit to my mom. She was reading John Holt in the 70s when I was a baby and, you know, got some of my brothers, not me so much, but into homeschooling, and then read Grace's book basically as soon as it came out and wrote to Grace, "You gotta hire my kids."
So, and that's Grace Llewellyn, Teenage Liberation Handbook, right?
That's right, yeah. Cool. So my brothers, two of my brothers went to camp, Not Back to School Camp, and I guess at the same time, my youngest brother was unschooled. So she must have read that book while he was like preschool age. And then, so I got to see my youngest brother unschool his whole life, until he started, you know, taking college classes at 13 or something.
But you missed the unschooling bandwagon. You went to school for,
I completely did. I did. I went to some, you know, I went to like a Montessori school 1 year and a free school for a period of time, and maybe in a private school of some kind when I was young. And I did homeschool my third grade year with a kind of through the mail curriculum. I forget the name of the company. It was pretty cool. It was Lawrence Williams program. But mostly I just went to public school, and my parents every year would say, "So, you sure you want to go to school this year?" And I would say, "Yep."
Thank you.
So yeah, that's where my friends are. So I mostly went to school, and, you know, all the way graduated high school, went to several years of community college, went to a trade school, run out of San Francisco State, eventually for record production, and then made my living doing that for a while, and then went back and finished a bachelor's degree and got a master's degree. So I'm, you know, traditionally educated fairly to the gills. But I did get to see my youngest brother unschooled, and my other brothers would often stay home from, you know, homeschool. You know, when they were asked, "Do you want to go to school?" a lot of time they said no. So I saw how that worked. And then my youngest brother, just watching him choose his own education, you know, minute by minute, and seeing that that really worked out for him, that was quite a revelation for me. And then I read Grace's book. And at one point, Grace visited our family because she knew some of my brothers, and she invited me to come to camp. That was 99, my first year of camp, and that just blew me away. seeing all of these teenagers just shining in a certain way, just having these interests, having this kind of well, anyway, I don't know.
And you went to camp as
gotten off track.
I went to camp as a
staffer.
Yeah, yeah. The same way that I got into Not Back to School Camp. Never went as a camper, went as a staff member.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember in my first advisee group, we went around and talked about what we did. And, you know, everybody had something that they said they did. And I, I remember one kid said he was a poet. And I didn't realize it, but a part of my brain said, oh, he wants to be a poet. And then I saw him go up in the talent show and improvise this amazing poem. And it just rocked me, like, oh no, he is a poet. He's obviously been putting all this time and passion into composing poetry, and he's there, you know. Not that he wouldn't be better after working at it for another couple decades, but it just really kind of shifted my view of what people can do with their teenage years.
And your first year staffing there was 99, and you've been staffing every year since then, sometimes more sessions, sometimes fewer. Don't you hold the award, the informal award of having staffed at Not Back to School Camp more than anyone else ever?
I did, I think, until I haven't actually done a count in a while. I'm definitely over 50 sessions of Not Back to School Camp. I think possibly Evan has passed me up.
Ah, Evan.
Yeah. And Matt.
Always a thorn in your side. And Matt. Another thorn.
But these Evan was in my first advisee group.
Yeah. That's something you can always lord over him.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So you have a lot of experience working with teenage unschoolers through Not Back to School Camp. And then outside of Not Back to School Camp, more recently, you've been training to become a licensed therapist.
Yeah.
And I know that you haven't been working officially with teenagers in that capacity, but I imagine that has given you some insight into the challenges that come with the amount of freedom that the unschooling approach brings. Is that right?
I think so. And I think insight may be a little strong of a word. I think I feel like I'm pretty deep inside the conversation about freedom and unschooling. And it may be that I have more questions or just things that I'm thinking about a lot than I have answers. But it's something I think about a lot. And, you know, listening to your podcast especially kind of keeps that conversation fresh.
Hmm. So do you think that there's any period in life more free than the period of life of a young person who is not obliged to do school as their full-time job? Like maybe a retired person has a similar amount of freedom?
Yeah, I think that is that's probably true. Depending on your social class, if you're extremely rich, you might have that situation your whole life. But I would venture to say that even a retired person is probably, you know, has a house and grounds to maintain and various responsibilities to people. So I'd say, yeah, those young years are the most freedom you're probably likely to ever get.
And in general, this is a good problem to have, right? This is better than the other problem of being severely repressed or constrained.
Yeah, or in jail.
In jail, something like that. And so,
for sure.
On the whole, the challenges that come with this kind of freedom, it's not like we're saying this is a terrible thing that we're doing to kids. It's just a unique situation, pretty recent in the history of education that young people have even run into these sorts of challenges.
Yeah, well, I think of the amount of freedom you have I don't know, maybe you could think of it like a bell curve, but it's certainly a spectrum, right? You know, you could be locked up or in a straitjacket on one end of it. And on the other end, you could have, you know, no constraints at all, which is a certain, which has its own limitations, you know?
I don't know. If you have no constraints at all, then what limitations are there?
Well, I think one of the things I think of is when I was learning to mix music tracks, my teacher, who was a great teacher, said, okay, choose three instruments that you can mix together. You know, you can choose, you know, a bass drum, bass guitar, and a vocal or something. But you don't want to start off with too many sounds to try and mix together, because you're just learning how to do it, how to put the sounds together. Similarly, actually, I remember, you know, early art teachers, you know, saying like, okay, choose three colors. Just giving some constraints so that the learning process is clear and easy to follow. And I mean, to the extent that it is, it's still pretty difficult to mix three sounds together in a way that sounds beautiful. You know, not just anything is going to work, but you can try a lot more things if you have some constraints there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a lot of discussion around creativity and constraints and how constraints are really beneficial to that. And also, you know, these classic studies about if you go into a supermarket and there's 50 different types of jelly to buy, how people react to that versus three different types.
Yeah, and there's actually a decrease in happiness in situations where your number of choices is overwhelming.
Okay, so let's extrapolate that to the situation of a 15-year-old unschooler. Let's say this is somebody who has been raised unschooled since birth.
Sure.
The amount of choices that this young person has for the direction they can take their life, what they want to focus on, how to structure their day, and we're assuming that their parents are giving them essentially, you know, carte blanche to do whatever they want as long as they're not breaking any laws or burning the house down. Would you say that that is a situation that can lead to a decrease in happiness just because there are so many different paths you can take that you feel overwhelmed?
I think it can. I think it depends on the personality of the teenager. But the potential is definitely there. In a way, it's kind of a problem of curation, right? Which is one of the major challenges of the modern age. You know, you have all this information, and you know, when you're in this phase of being a teenager, one answer to curation is going to school, and you have, you know, these people who, you know, been trained to teach people, and textbooks that have the information that somebody thought was important. You know, another version of that is some kind of homeschooling where the teacher is the parent and the parent is doing the curating. And then the, you know, the unschooling approach is, you know, almost more like, well, whoever your information sources are on the internet is doing the curation for you. And it's just such a vast source of information. You can just kind of get lost in it. And, you know, information in quotes, you know, some of the half the stuff on the internet is wrong.
I think that's generous of you, Nathan. That's probably 75%.
Probably 90%. Yeah.
And when you go to school, there's this security that comes with the idea that you're plugging into the canon of human knowledge.
Yeah.
You are plugging into this vetted system of instruction and that millions of other young people are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And then when you leave that system, there must be, you know, an equal amount of anxiety that comes with just not doing what other people are doing and feeling like maybe I'm right and I'm rebelling in a way that's going to help me in the long run, but maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Maybe this is all a giant mistake.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe I will wish that I hadn't spent a year learning about something off the internet, which turned out to be wrong.
Or writing fan fiction for Pokemon or something.
Oh, who would regret that? I don't know.
Not nowadays. With Pokemon Go, that is a true asset to have under your belt.
Yeah. major social asset as well. Yeah, I think, again, it kind of depends on the personality. You know, certain types of people are going to be more or less concerned about, you know, what they should be learning. You know, it's kind of in the air that you want to be learning some math, right? And I think that's one area. When I talk to grown unschoolers, often they feel like they didn't get math like they wish they had, and now they don't really have time.
Really, this is a common response that you hear?
Yeah.
Math regrets?
Yeah.
But are these people regretting that they weren't forced to do a bunch of factoring of polynomial equations and they're missing that? Or did they feel like it was a handicap to kind of moving up in formal education, like going to college or grad school?
No, I think not so much algebra, but more arithmetic and, you know, maybe more advanced arithmetic. I mean, it's something you see mirrored in kids who, you know, kids who went to school and are adults. They're often more kind of afraid of math. I don't think the grown unschoolers that I've talked to have not been particularly afraid of math, maybe a little bit, but more just like, yeah, I didn't want to sit and, you know, drill. So I, you know, had my times tables memorized, so I never did it. And now I wish I had. I wish someone had made me do that. I've had actually several grown homeschoolers and unschoolers tell me that very thing.
Huh. So more of the core kind of foundational math, the ability to quickly do mental math that they feel like they missed out on.
Yeah. And I think maybe I'm reading into this some, but I think maybe just they are wishing that they had developed more of a mathematical intuition, you know, so they could like look at something involving numbers and just kind of like feel confident and fluent in what they might do with those numbers.
Maybe math anxiety is just a universal human trait, regardless of your kind of type of education.
Yeah.
I know lots of school people who feel the same way.
Yeah. I think, well, one thing that this is maybe a bit of a tangent, but I think, you know, you mentioned polynomials, and I think, you know, the reason to learn algebra, if you're going to learn algebra, that, you know, if you're not going to be an engineer or something like that, where you would really need algebra, is to put arithmetic in that intuitive category. So, you know, when you're doing algebra, you're kind of like at a higher level of math that makes you kind of like really strengthen your arithmetic skills. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You just have to use them so often that they become more automatic.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, you don't need to know polynomials, you know, unless you're doing like modeling or something like that. But if you do, you kind of get this facility with arithmetic that kind of, you know, can be helpful.
Yeah.
I think
so with all this freedom, you have the potential to miss out on areas of study that you might regret in the future.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, but with that comes the opportunity to dive deep into areas that you think you're really passionate about right now.
Kind Absolutely. Of like
that teenager you had in your first advisory group at camp who was the poet.
Yeah.
That probably would not have happened if that kid was doing school full time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the trade-off, and I think that, you know, the quality of learning that you can do when you're passionate about something is so high that, you know, it's in most cases, I think it's a good trade-off to make.
Yeah. And that quality of learning leads to a depth of learning that I think makes unschoolers kind of unbalanced in the sense of knowing a lot about some things and then having giant gaps, giant areas of kind of ignorance in other areas. But
yeah,
the way that I rationalize that to myself as an okay thing and something that's potentially better than being a so-called well-rounded person is that if you have spent a lot of time practicing that mode of sort of passionate learning about something that you have chosen and that you are fully engaged with, if you kind of know what that feeling is to learn like that, then at some point later in your life when you realize that you have one of these gaps and it's a liability for you, you know nothing about history, and all of a sudden, whatever, your girlfriend is super into history, and you're like, damn it, I better figure out what happened in World War II. Mm-hmm. Then you can jump into that mode of learning, that passionate, focused, consensual mode of learning, yeah. Because you know what it feels like.
Yeah.
Do you buy that argument?
I do. I think there are some complexities, but I think, you know, if you know how to learn, then you know that you can learn something. And you know how to do it. You know how to dive into it.
And I feel like if you go to school, that is not something that most kids walk away with. I think they walk away with the sensation that to learn something, they have to go back into some sort of high time intensive, high resource intensive situation like school or college or grad school in order to figure something out, that they are dependent upon other people to do this learning, that, you know, any learning beyond the most basic stuff that you could Google. And that seems like a pretty big liability to going through life.
Yeah, I think, you know, that can happen, and I think it does. But I also think, I mean, do you feel like that? You went to school.
Yeah, no, I don't feel like that. I feel like I can learn anything I want. I also had kind of a unique experience in college where I got to design my own major and really have a lot of choice and autonomy.
Yeah.
Yeah, hard to parse apart.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on your personality and your kind of cognitive bent to some degree, because I also did a lot of school and, you know, didn't design my own major, but I chose my own major and just, you know, maybe I was easily turned on by a good teacher, but I didn't come out of that, you know, my schooling experience with a feeling like I needed to have school. I definitely enjoyed having, like when I went to graduate school and I was like just getting all this amazing, you know, curated information dumped into my head by these, you know, really good professional therapists and teachers, you know, I was like, wow, that was, you know, it was a peak experience.
I remember having some astronomy classes where I felt exactly the same way. I felt like it was a sermon.
Yeah.
Like afterwards, I was a changed person.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, and I think, so it doesn't have that, you know, having experiences like that doesn't necessarily affect your ability to think of yourself as a learner. But I think it can. And especially if, you know, you're in less than optimal educational situations and the teacher is like, you know, emotionally confusing or, you know, who knows, teachers have, you know, they're humans and can pass on a fair amount of confusion as well as the information they pass on.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to another aspect of the challenges of having a lot of freedom, and that's motivation.
Sure. And
something that comes up all the time. Regarding accountability, regarding the role of a teacher or a parent, and intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So maybe can you just summarize the problem for us, Nathan? Like, what's the challenge of being a totally liberated teenager and then feeling motivated?
Let's see. Well, I guess I just know a lot of people who struggle with motivation. And, you know, my community is basically grown unschoolers. So I kind of think of it from what they tell me, it's just been difficult to kind of keep something up in a satisfying way. You know, I just know a bunch of people who, like, their kind of continual struggle in life is deciding that they're going to do such and such and then deciding nah, and then switching to the next thing and deciding no, and, like, you know, eventually kind of having to rationalize, well, I dipped my toe a little bit into a bunch of stuff, but basically feeling unsatisfied with that. And so I do think about that quite a bit. It's never been my struggle, so I don't have much skin in the game there, except to the extent that I want to help people in that situation. So uh-huh. I do. I don't know. How so did I do? Can you?
Yeah, yeah. It sounds to me like it's motivation is not quite encapsulating what you're saying here. That a lot of these grown unschoolers who, you know, are motivated to to start new things, to start new projects, to dive into something that seems exciting. But it's the commitment. It's the long-term sticking with it.
Yeah,
that is the challenge.
And this is something one of the reasons I thought of this as a topic was I was listening to this podcast recently, and there was this guy who was, you know, like a highly decorated Navy SEAL, you know, like kind of amazing dude, who was doing all this stuff, you know, after having retired and everything. And he was taking questions from the audience. And one of the questions was, how do you motivate yourself for like long projects, you know, difficult things that you're working on? How do you keep the motivation up? And his answer was, motivation is crap, basically. Like, you can't rely on motivation. You know, motivation goes away if you didn't get enough sleep, or, you know, your blood sugar gets a little low, or motivation is not reliable. What's reliable is discipline. And then he went on to describe the joys of discipline. And I think I heard that and I thought, well, that's a piece of the conversation that would be valuable in unschooling. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you are really just relying on this magical, this sense of like inspiration, you can find yourself just floating around and never digging your hands into something deeply and creating something, you know, a long-term, difficult, challenging project that, you know, that withstands the comings and goings of motivation.
I, as you say all this, you're making me realize that I'm definitely part of the problem, Nathan.
Oh, yeah?
In my first book, I used the word excitement as the main metric that an unschooler should use to determine what's worth doing. Yeah. You know, what, you know, gets you excited? What makes you want to get up in the morning and start moving? Which is essentially the same thing as saying just what, you know, what's your intrinsic passion or your, you know, what do you just feel naturally motivated to do? And this is just part of the religion of unschooling, which is that this thing that we call intrinsic motivation or passion. Intrinsic motivation is a technical term. So like this thing called passion exists. And we just need to follow it. It's like we're following our muse, some pixie flying around that we have to catch, and it slips out of our fingers, and we got to go track it down again.
Yeah.
And well, and what
I,
this
I
guy
wanna,
seems
I don't want to diss passion. Like, I think it's awesome, and I think it's a great place to start. But I think, you know, I guess the thing that felt missing was, you know, well, what about when it gets hard, or when, you know, when these fluctuations happen, you know, and it feels like, oh, the magic is gone. Do you keep with it, or do you, and you know, of course there's no right answer to that in a general sense. You can definitely get onto a track and like be disciplined and, you know, devote your life to something that ended up being a disappointment or something.
Sounds like we're talking about kind of short-term gain versus long-term gain.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and deferred gratification.
Yeah.
You know, all these basic ideas that are pretty ingrained in the school system.
Yeah.
You know, deferred gratification. The reason you ostensibly put up with all this bullshit in high school is so you can get the high school diploma, and that will magically grant you access to college or jobs, even though those are pretty dubious claims.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for not just flitting around, kind of following the pixie wherever it goes.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, have you run into any unschoolers who sort of, you know, go too far in the other direction and just put themselves onto some sort of rigid schedule who, you know, they seem to have lost that passion. They're really just overprescribing themselves with a large dose of discipline.
Well, yeah, of course. I think probably, you know, where I end up shooting myself in the foot is in that direction. Not so much losing the passion, but like getting overscheduled, burning the candle at both ends, you know, like just piling up my day and my mind with things. So, so that, you know, I can feel like, you know, there's definitely despair in the dark reaches of that corridor, you know, you know, especially as an adult with responsibilities that, oh, this thing that I'm passionate about, these 10, 20 things that I'm, you know, have passion for, you know, they're just crawling along at a snail's pace, or maybe they're totally on the back burner. There's definitely some distress available there. And again, I think it's kind of a personality issue, you know. Yeah, I had a friend who never went into libraries because she just thought, I will never be able to read all these books. It was very depressing for her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was the opposite of my experience.
Yeah, me too.
But I can kind of, you know, I get it.
She needed a curator.
Exactly.
She needed you to go into the library and say, like, here are the best book. Three books that you'll like. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess the thing about discipline that I wanted to say is it is, you know, it is a skill. It's something you develop in yourself, right?
It is. And I wonder if you develop it better through the challenges of unschooling, the challenges of total freedom and starting something and then losing that intrinsic motivation and then saying, you know, kind of getting frustrated with yourself at some point and saying, listen, I'm just seeing myself go through this cycle.
Yeah.
I need to break this. And coming at the challenge of discipline through that direction, as opposed to the externally imposed discipline of school or a highly rigid job. I agree with you. It's probably a personality thing. I think that there are some people who definitely need the externally exposed structure to sort of quell that voice in their head that just wants them to go zipping off in every other direction.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would put it a little bit differently than you just did, but, you know, more like some people will thrive with, you know, a kind of more of a system around them, you know, and some people will thrive and develop discipline based purely on a passion that they have, you know. I guess I just have had the experience, you know, of having had so much school in my past, and I feel like I pretty well thrived on it, you know, depending, you know, not if I had a bad teacher or something like that, but that I did develop discipline, you know, being on the swim team or being in school and kind of like being handed hard things to do and getting them done.
You have to study for a midterm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I learned about myself through that process that I could do that and that, you know, I gained the ability to do it, not in spite of the system, but, you know, with the assistance of that system. And I think I definitely know people who that system had the exact opposite effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I do think it really is like a matter of fit.
Nathan, I want you to develop a personality typing system for for education.
Okay.
It's like Myers-Briggs or Big Five or something, and I'll just take an easy questionnaire and it will tell me if I should homeschool or unschool or go to a military school or a Waldorf school.
Well, it probably is. I mean, it's also probably developmental, right? This year I started polling my advisee groups at Not Back to School Camp. Like, what's your education been like in your life? And I'd say 75% of the campers had basically started off homeschooling when they were young. And then around the time that they became teenagers started unschooling, or maybe a little before then, to the extent that I started thinking like, this is maybe the way most unschoolers, you know, lifelong unschoolers are doing it, that, you know, that there's some, you know, the parents are involved more in a teaching environment when they're young. And then when they get older, it's more like, okay, now what do you want to learn? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I've noticed that also in my advisory groups. And also I polled my advisory group this year and we're talking about the first session of Oregon Not Back to School Camps. It's still during the summer months. And so you can go to this camp, and you can also still go to school. And every single one of my advisees had done some amount of formal schooling.
Right.
And so they were all some mix of formal education and informal, unstructured learning. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that a lot because I have a daughter now. She's 4.5 months, so I got some time. But, you know, I'm going to have to make some decisions about what we do. And I think, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on her personality and what she wants. And also, I think there's a certain, I don't know, I've seen my nephew Ollie's 5 and he's starting to homeschool. And I've also watched, you know, Grace with Yared. And it seems like it is quite common, probably not universal, but quite common that, you know, in those young years, 5 years old, you know, maybe 5 to 10 or something, kids, they really want to spend time with their parents, and like homeschooling is a fun way to do it, you know, potentially. Marie Yard saying like, can we do homeschooling? Can we do homeschooling? Like he just really wanted to sit down and like do some math with his mom. and I think, you know, well, I could probably be a pretty good curator for my daughter when, you know, in those early years, getting, you know, getting some math in there, getting some whatever, and in a way that will be hopefully not confusing or irritating to her, mostly just, you know, inspiring or fun or something like that. Like, I think maybe, you know, in a lot of cases, you want to take advantage of that, that desire for, you know, projects and, you know, mom or dad leading the show, you know.
Yeah. In the same way that you can take advantage of the window when a child is 2 or 3 years old to learn a foreign language.
Yeah,
with,
right.
You know, almost no friction.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, I wonder if, you know, 50 years from now, it'll be more of a sort of economic possibility for families to homeschool. And it'll just be the norm that you homeschool your kid from birth through age 11. Uh-huh. And then from there, there's this potpourri of options. You know, when this sort of developmental stage is coming to an end and adolescence is beginning, and we'll look back and be like, oh my gosh, we shoved everyone off into school factories.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we will. It'll be an interesting, it'll be an interesting life. We'll get to see that unfold.
Yeah. You'll be able to be that grandpa, Nathan. Who's like, I was unschooling before you kids ever even heard about this. Let's move on to another big challenge of total freedom that you and I have discussed, which is the obligation to be amazing, or the expectation that you need to become a genius or an expert in something. If you're an unschooler, if you're somebody else who has all this free time, you know, it's not enough to just sit around and lazily enjoy that free time, you know, to lay out in a park and count the clouds, or to just kind of browse the bookstore. No, this, you know, with this freedom comes this unstated obligation to do something incredible with it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What have you seen? Like, well, how about this? What are some of the incredible things or stories that you've seen in your time working with unschoolers that sort of set the bar?
Oh yeah, gosh, so many. I mean, Sarah Beth riding her bike across the country springs to mind, of course. Seems like whenever you hear about an unschooler in our community, it is for one of these kinds of things, you know. Now, you know, all of these kids who've like been to Argentina, or have you gone to India yet? Anyway, lots of like world traveling, solo traveling, or you know, becoming a professional dancer, or
music is the one that at Not Back to School Camp, I feel like the musicians who we see the most and who we hear the most, and you know, you're the one who runs the music project at camp, Nathan, the ones who we see and hear the most are the ones who have really taken advantage of their free time to get really good at the guitar or another instrument, at the piano. And so we hear, you know, the 16-year-old playing this incredible piece on the piano.
Yeah.
And that sets the bar, right? It's like, have an equivalent skill to that?
Right. It is deeply moving to see, you know, some, you know, a teenager get up and, you know, play a piece of music that, you know, brings tears to your eyes. It's just so well played. And so has, or doing some other kind of performance. It is, I think, yeah, it's hard to, it's impossible to, for me to avoid that emotional experience. Like, that's one of my favorite things about camp, is getting to see people display what they've been working on all year.
Yeah, it makes it such an inspiring community.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do, and I think there is, and, you know, by talking to teenagers who aren't in that position where they don't feel like they have something amazing to display, there can be a sense of, oh, I'm wasting my time, or I'm wasting my life, and I should be doing something like this. It becomes a way to beat yourself up for what you're not doing.
Yeah, I was just reviewing one of my favorite books called Why We Do What We Do by Edward Deci, one of the psychologists who authored Self-Determination Theory.
Yeah, autonomy.
Autonomy, competence, and relevancy,
right,
which has also been called purpose. So, yeah, he uses this kind of esoteric term from psychology, which is introjection, the opposite of projection. And so introjection, you know, it's when we take and swallow whole some idea from the outside world, usually comes from an authority figure, and we just take that idea and we completely, you know, make it part of ourselves. Mm. So the idea might be, you know, a political ideal. It might be an idea about how society functions, or how we're supposed to act, and we just swallow it. And that's always struck me as something that school is very good at propagating. You know, family life is the number one propagator, sure, of that, for sure. But school is very good at that. That's where we get all these beliefs. And I think a number of negative beliefs about social interaction can come from school, from the sort of Hobbesian world of the playground.
Yeah.
But this can happen also within non-schooling community, a community of supposed total freedom and acceptance. And it can come from something as benign as watching somebody who's your same age do an incredible performance on the piano. And then all of a sudden you think, you know, I must be as impressive as this person.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's just something we cannot escape. Maybe we cannot author an environment of complete freedom, Nathan. All of my ideals are crashing down.
Yeah. Well, again, I think this is another mixed bag, right? Like, you could, again, it's probably partly personality. I'm thinking about this story of my dad and his brother when they were teenagers, went and saw this amazing guitar player. And they were both guitar player, both learning to play guitar. And my dad came home from that concert and just put his nose to the grindstone and just played guitar, you know, 5 hours a day or something whenever he wasn't in school. And his brother gave up guitar forever. Like, I will never be that good. You know, I think, you know, what you're describing, you know, when you see the piano performance or whatever, is in a certain way is a sense of inspiration. Like, I want to be able to do something amazing. Right.
Yeah. And that can cut both ways.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I think in general, it's a positive thing. And I have the pleasure of working with a lot of not back to school campers on my Unschool Adventures programs. And I more hear the report that I went to camp and I got so inspired. Or, you know, sometimes I hear from people who went on like one of my programs, but have not been to camp. It's often the same story. It's like I went and I got so inspired that I went home and started working really hard on X or Y or Z.
Yeah, right.
I don't hear the story as much that says I got really intimidated and I went home and felt really anxious and depressed and didn't do anything. Of course, you know, there's the fact that we might not hear those stories because people don't want to share those stories.
Yeah, true.
As compared to the victory story.
That's true. Yeah. I think one of the things I want to say that's coming back up here is, I think the thing that you want to develop a taste for is flow states. And, you know, when you see someone play the amazing piano, you know, performance at the talent show and not back to school camp, you know, you're kind of seeing the result of hours and hours of flow state activity on the piano. And it's maybe not obvious when you first, you know, it's just like, wow, this person's a rock star. They're amazing. But if you can kind of translate that into, oh, this is about practice, you know, and not practice in a fun way, not practice in a way that's, you know, like a deliberate practice is not particularly a joyful thing. You know what I mean? It's being fully in the moment, fully engaged, challenged to the right level, not overly challenged enough to create like an anxiety state. But it's, you know, it's work. It's hard work. And that's kind of getting back to the discipline, like developing a taste for the kind of disciplined flow state activities that produce these kinds of amazing things that we see in unschoolers. Like that seems to be the key, right?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up deliberate practice because I've also been really excited about that recently because Anders Ericsson, the researcher who coined the term and did all the foundational research this year, published a book called Peak, which is his first popular science book that he's written in a long time or ever perhaps, where he really clarifies all this stuff that before was research that was academic research that was then reinterpreted by popular writers, most notably Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah. And his 10,000 hour rule. And so it's coming straight from the horse's mouth. And you're exactly right that deliberate practice is this special form of practice where it's very intense. It's not enjoyable. It's not even like sometimes enjoyable. It's, you know, people report not having fun, not having a good time. Like this is really work with a capital W.
Yeah.
And usually you need some sort of teacher or coach or other. Sometimes the activity has natural feedback involved, but oftentimes you need somebody else to sort of give you feedback and then design a very specific, very focused activity for you that might just be like playing scales on a guitar.
Yeah.
And you do it over and over again until you're perfect. And once you get through all that deliberate practice and you build up those skills, then you have the chance. I like this analogy of you're in the rainstorm the whole time while you're doing deliberate practice. You're just cold and shivering and it's hard. But then sometimes you kind of pop out above the clouds and you see the sunny day. Yeah. And that is the flow state.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a lot of overlap between those two. It's a state of high challenge, you know, right at your threshold of ability.
Yeah.
But flow state is enjoyable and positive, and deliberate practice is hard work.
Right.
Yeah, I think when you see that incredible piano performance or something like that, a dance performance or somebody reciting poetry, or even somebody solving a Rubik's Cube, I wonder who would do that. That you're observing the flow state, and that's something that I think it's a good thing to have a sense of jealousy might not be the right word, but you know, saying I want to do what this person is doing. I want to achieve
that
state. I want some of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I think this obligation to be amazing or to become amazing can be a positive thing.
Yeah.
It's a form of positive peer pressure.
Right. Yeah. Right. That you can, you know, it's possible to accomplish something amazing with your life and, you know, let's get on with it.
Yeah. And if you have the opportunity, then don't squander it.
Yeah. Right. This kind of touches on something that I think is also useful, maybe to potentially, I would love it to be useful, a useful thing for somebody who's young and thinking about like their career. Well, there's this draw towards, you know, performance or artistic kind of stuff. At least among not back to school campers, it seems like, you know, everywhere you look, you got an artist, right?
I think that's part of the personality package you've been talking about.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe. And maybe it's kind of a culture thing or, you know, there's, I guess one of the things that I like to pitch to unschoolers is the idea that you are likely in a very privileged position compared to most of the people on the planet. And by that, I mean, you know, where every human starts off their life as, well, completely focused on themselves. We egocentric, we call it, you know, you can't help it. You're a baby all you know about is what you need and getting your needs met, and that the course of growing up is basically the course of learning how to get your own needs met and then refocusing on helping other people. And the extent to which you grow up, I think, is the extent to which you do kind of develop care and concern and compassion for other people and want to, you know, be a force for change in the world. And I think not everybody gets there, because not everybody, you know, is born with the same amount of privilege. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I buy that. Keep going.
So, but I think if you, you know, if you're an unschooler, you know, who's a young person and are listening to me talking right now, chances are you are going to get to that place in your life where what you really want to do is make a positive impact in other people's lives. And, you know, right now, that may not be obvious to you because, you know, you're kind of mid-trajectory between completely egocentric and much more world-centric. And so when you're choosing what kind of career you want to go into, you know, as a very young person, you might be drawn to some kind of rock star kind of, what I want to do is, you know, be famous or, you know, be known for being amazing. But I think if you can believe what I'm saying right now, probably what you will want to have accomplished by the time you die is having had a very positive impact on a lot of people's lives. And so when you're thinking about what career you want to, you know, sink your, 80,000 hours you get in a career, you know, think about things that will help people, you know, like consider public policy or mental health or, you know, or I don't know, engineering. I was listening to the conversation you had with Dev, and you were like, you brought up engineering as like this, you know, the archetypical unexamined career path. You're like, yeah, an electrical engineer who never thought about what they wanted to do. But I was on the bus last week with a guy who had just graduated from his bachelor's program in chemical engineering, and you know, he didn't start a bachelor's program in chemical engineering because he was passionate about chemistry, I highly doubt. But he had kind of set himself up to be a chemical engineer, and he was so excited about it. He was just about to interview with Faraday, this new electric car company, and he was just really interested in working on batteries. And like, you know, whoever figures out batteries is going to really change the world in a big way.
Yeah.
And completely. And, you know, this kid had, as far as I could tell, more or less accidentally chosen a career that put him in a place of strong leverage on this very big problem that the world has. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I hope I didn't throw engineers under the bus too much in my conversation with Dev. I have some good friends who are engineers. And I definitely think that even if you don't feel some sense of deep passion for a major that you're going to choose in college, you can have a sense of, you know, in which field will I become most useful?
Yeah.
Based upon what I know about my personality, my skill set, you know, right, where I've been effective thus far in life. And I believe you that with a sense of competence and a sense of contribution, even if it's to something as esoteric as, you know, battery, you know, technology development, that leads to happiness. And I'm a little shocked, Nathan, I'm just going to say this, a little shocked that as somebody who is so into music, you think that rock stars don't help the world. You don't think they spread joy across continents, across earbuds everywhere?
Yeah, they do. You know, among other things. But
I'll just let that one go.
Yeah. I just think, you know, there a little bit of the kind of trouble that sneaks in with the kind of, you know, you must do something amazing or you will do something amazing. You're destined to do something amazing as an unschooler is that, you know, you will be, you know, Prince or Madonna or You know what I mean? You get into
the expectation that you'll become an outlier.
Yes, exactly.
Of massive success.
Those people are way, way outside, you know, way into the narrow tail of the bell curve. And, you know, that they're so much in the limelight that you kind of almost can't help but want to be famous like them. But it's actually pretty awful.
Yeah, you don't see all the crap they have to wade through.
Yeah, I
mean, you just see the shiny parts.
Read their biographies, and you see like people who are ambitious enough to get out that far outside, you know, the norm of human experience. They, you know, they don't even know anyone that they knew. You know, they like, you know, every person was a stepping stone to them. You know, probably there are exceptions to this, but you know, the extent to which ambition rules your life, you know, you put yourself on another track. I'm not sure how deep I want to go into this, but
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And let's pivot away now.
Sure.
To the last topic, that we decided we were going to talk about for the challenges associated with total freedom, and that's mental health. And this is something that we've touched upon in all of our previous threads, regarding anxiety, regarding status, but you are becoming a mental health professional, and I want to hear your take on the kind of mental health issues or concerns or problems that come up with people who are, especially young people, who are dealing with so much freedom, so much choice and opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'd say is that unschoolers tend to have the same kind of trouble that that schooled kids have to a large extent. And I think I was surprised by that when I realized, like, oh, these kids, and not back to school camp, you know, when you get into talking about what's hard for them, they're having a hard time in very similar ways to other teenagers. And I think there's a kind of an expectation that, oh, since I am doing this lifestyle that is so much better than going to school, that I'm going to be perfect. You know, I'm not going to have problems. That in a certain way, there's a little bit of magical thinking about what unschooling can do for you, and that, you know, since I'm avoiding this trap of school and all of the, you know, very real social problems that come from ghettoizing age groups and stuff like that, that I'm actually going to be, you know, free of psychological trouble. and the fact is, you just can't avoid having a full human experience in your life. I mean, I guess I know a few people who just really seem like they're happy all the time. But it seems like, you know, you're most likely, you as an unschooler, are going to have, you know, the same kind of challenges that humans have had since, you know, the beginning. And that unschooling can be helpful, and it can, you know, it can also create some anxiety about some different things than people who are going to school. But I guess partly I just want to kind of normalize having a normal level of psychological challenge as an unschooler, you know.
You want to set the expectations straight.
Yeah.
I agree with you that there is this magical hope that by removing ourselves from this major societal institution, that will suddenly clear up all of our mental health challenges.
Yeah.
But walking away from one institution, you know, that's just such a small part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, we're still part of human society.
Yeah.
We are still part of our families, our communities. Yeah. You know, we're probably still connected to a lot of the culture that is in school, which is just youth culture.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to escape.
Yeah. And I think in some ways, the ways that humans have trouble psychologically are side effects of having human brains, you know. You have a brain that can, you know, think about the future and plan for the future. And along with that comes anxiety, right? Which is an uncomfortable state. And the same can be said for different kinds of psychological trouble. I think is just kind of part of being human to some degree. So that, I guess that was the main message I wanted to get across on that. I do think it does occur to me that if I do think there's some magic in unschooling, it comes from this experience I have that my favorite people are unschoolers and in the unschooling community. Like, I know I can go to Not Back to School Camp and meet just the people that I want to be with more than anybody else, who are my people, who are feel like my community. You know what I mean? If the combination of parenting and freedom and, you know, whatever it is, whatever combination of, you know, people that we get together at Not Back to School Camp is just unfailingly inspiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And, but this could also just be you and your unique personality quirks.
That's true.
Being matched with other people and their quirks in the same way that somebody who's a devout Mormon, you know, they go hang around a group of other Mormons and they're like, oh yeah, this is good. These are my people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And I know like, some Quakers who go to their big Quaker gathering and like, that's the thing that is as good as camp for them, you know? And I guess I could think like when I go to a Lindy Hop exchange or something like that, I have a similar experience. But I also have a lot of experiences, you know, working with teenagers who are in high school or, you know, or just working, you know, in a workplace with people who are also in mental health or something like that. And, you know, they're like, these are all good people doing the best they can, good hearted. And, you know, I feel like I can get close with them, but the kind of genuine, honest, inspiring, vulnerable interactions that really, in my mind, create a strong community and inspiration in my life are just most very, very strongly, most reliably found with unschoolers.
So we're all just really trying to find our own little cults throughout life.
or a culture. I think, you know, we all want
people. You can't say culture without cults.
That's true. Yeah, right. Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of negative connotation that comes along with the idea of a cult. And I think a lot of that is probably well-deserved. But there's a certain... I don't know. See, you're wanting me to say, oh, these people just agree with you and that's why you like them. But I think that there's more to it than that. I think when I talk to a teenager at Not Back to School Camp, they're interested in talking. Like, they don't have to talk to me, you know? And when I talk to a kid from a high school background, they're actively disinterested in talking to adults for the most part. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not true across the board, but just as in a general way, I think I think there is a different quality that comes with this lifestyle that is, I don't know, I just love it.
All right, Nathan, anything else on your mind on the subject of the challenges that come with total freedom as a young person? Anything that popped up earlier that you wanted to circle back to?
Not that I'm remembering. I'm sure I'll think about them for the rest of the day.
With all your freedom.
Yeah.
All right, Nathan, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Blake.
If you enjoyed this ad-free podcast, there are many ways you can support it. You can write a review on iTunes. You can share it on social media. You can email it to someone who might benefit from it. Or you can support it directly with a per-episode donation at offtraillearning.com/support.